Okay, so we're talking about end-of-life care. What do you have to do and when? And we started looking at that Ramah in Yeridei Shalom. So let's look at it again. Because this is the fundamental source for all of these topics. And so it's important to know what he actually said, and then what people assume that he said, and how we understand him today, especially in light of the fact that he's talking about really weird and strange things.
You say end of life?
End of life. Dying patients. So let's just get it up. Still blinking, sorry. So we talked about the fact that you can never do anything active to end someone's life. That's called murder. You can never do anything active to end someone's life. I'm sorry, this is a little bit small. When I made it bigger, kind of blurry. So you can never do anything active to end someone's life. So the Shulchan Aruch says at the beginning, right? You have anyone who's alive, you treat like he's alive. You can't prepare for his funeral while he's still alive, if he's dying. So what can you, so then the Shulchan Aruch says clearly, the chol ha-me'ameitz yitzias ha-nefesh are yitzias ha-nefesh. Right? If you close the eyes of someone who's dying, it's as if you've murdered him, because he's dying, he's not dead yet, and you touching him for some reason that doesn't help him, that's hastening his death, and that's murder. You're not allowed to hasten his death. Okay? Fine. So the Ramah and some other things you're not supposed to prepare the burial plot until he's dead. Okay. He says, V'chein asur libram lameis shayamus mehera. You may not cause the person to die faster, which is effectively a restatement of what the Shulchan Aruch said.
How is ordering a burial plot hastening
the death? That's not hastening the death. There are two different issues. You're not allowed to hasten the death, and you're not allowed to prepare for his funeral.
So
two separate things.
We talked about that.
Yeah, you can buy, meaning anything that you would do today, you can do then. If you're only doing it because the guy's in his deathbed, you shouldn't do it. You just don't plan for, you treat him like he's alive. That's A. And B, don't hasten his death. Two separate topics that get intermeshed here. Okay, maybe that wasn't clear last time, so it should be clear, right? You're not allowed to hasten his death, you can never do anything active, and you have to treat him like he's alive for other, not even though it's not hastening his death. So we talk about the Ramah has different examples. He says, Mishu goseis man arach, so you have a goseis, which we didn't define. It's someone who's dying. We'll talk about what that means. V'layuchali paragre, the soul can't separate. We talked about this. So we made a list. So usher, what you're not allowed to do, is lahashme takar v'akasas mitachtav. You can't take out the pillow or the blanket from under his head. Sort of interesting. We don't have so much overlap from last. Yes, last time here, so we'll pause it a little bit. So you cannot take the pillow and from under his head. Why? Anyone remember why?
The feathers.
Right. So he says, the Ramah tells you why. Why do you want to take the pillow out from under his head?
He tells you.
Mikach sha'over chiyas notos mitzas opos shigormin said. There was a thought that the feathers in the pillow are keeping his soul from departing. The feathers are causing that. So you removing the feathers will cause him to die. Right? Can't do that.
Right? So you have usher and mutter. Usher is closing the eyes, right? And removing feathers. Okay? The chayin lo yezis enem yukomo. You can't move him.
Because if you move him, and there's no reason for it, you might hasten his death. You're stressing him. You can't put the keys to the shul under his head, for his soul to leave faster.
So, keys to the shul. Okay, so we're not going to pretend that we understand how these feathers work. We're not going to pretend that we understand how the keys to the shul work. I sort of understand why you can't close his eyes or move him. That sort of makes sense. We're not going to pretend we know why. I think that's a little bit silly, because we have no idea.
But the fact is, the Ramah believed that these things happened, right? I don't care how they happened. They assumed these things were real. So given that these things are real, we have to deal with them, right? They assumed that these feathers are keeping you alive, so you can't remove them. And they assume putting the keys there will hasten the guy's death, so you can't do it.
But how can we compare things to things we don't understand?
We're going to be a little stuck, but we'll have to try our best. He assumed it works. So do I care how modern medicine works when I want to tell you? Meaning, is that relevant? On the molecular level, how is this working? Maybe, maybe not. We'll talk about it.
This is like in the magical category.
So the question is, did he think it was a magical
category?
What did the Ramah think?
Right, we don't.
So did he think it was physical or metaphysical? I don't know.
So he says, aval, however, now things that are permissible, right? Is usher, is going to be mutter. Im yesham davar segore ikuv yitzias hanefesh. Right, we wrote this out, just important phrase.
Davar segore ikuv yitzias hanefesh.
Something that is causing, or the is causing the prevention of the soul from leaving, something that's preventing death, that you're going to be allowed to remove. So that's going to be on the mutter list. So what? Like what? Next to that house where the guy is dying, there is a banging sound, like chopping a tree. So these wood chopper, this banging sound, this repetitive noise is keeping the guy alive. Again, we're not going to pretend we know how. You can stop that. So you can stop the wood chopper. What else can you do? Oshiyesh melech haloshono ve'ilu akni tiyas hanefesh. Or there's salt on his tongue. Right? Okay, those are the two examples he gives. The examples are important, not much how they work, but how we can compare things to them.
What do you mean, remove the salt from the tongue?
He has salt on his tongue, and that's keeping him alive. Removing the salt from his tongue will, that's preventing his soul from departing, the Rama says. Getting rid of the salt will allow his soul to depart.
Are you allowed to do that or not?
He says yes, that's why it's on the mutter column. Right? These things. Mudr la sir misham, the aim was a maise klal al shamas meser hamoneya. I'll write that out. Aim baze maase klal al shamas hamoneya. Okay, so last time we talked a little bit about how you treat a gosei, so if you didn't learn here, just listen to that. How you deal with the gosei, what sort of how the ethics around that work. So we're not going to go into that right now. But we're going to assume, so this, right? Ein baze maase klal. This is not an action, but you're rather removing an impediment. Meisir hamoneh.
It seems like the feathers.
Okay, so now we have several questions. First of all, these are permissible because they're removing an impediment, and these are forbidden. I don't know why. So let's figure it out. Let's assume active passive, okay? So active things that are actively hastening death versus things that are preventing the soul from leaving. So I can see why closing the eyes, moving, and keys to the shul are prohibited. I'm doing something actively. I'm adding something, changing something that's going to kill him faster. So that's forbidden. Removing feathers. I'm looking at the usher column first. The usher column, I understand. Things that are actively hastening his death, I'm putting the keys weren't there and I'm adding them. I'm doing something to him that's going to make him die sooner. Usher. I'm closing his eyes. His eyes were open. Why are you closing his eyes? He's not dying soon. They're removing him. Removing feathers? Because they're keeping him alive? So how is that different from the guy who's chopping wood? The guy who's chopping wood is keeping him alive. Right?
I'm actively removing
the wood chopper, which is keeping him alive. So it's a little bit strange. Why is one permissible and one not? So we have several questions we're going to look at. The first question is, why are the feathers different than the wood chopper, right?
One's much closer. One's actually touching him. The wood chopper is...
Okay, so that's one answer. And the second question, we'll get the answers in a second. The second question is, well, wait a minute. The Rama said you can't do anything that's going to hasten the guy's death. Right? The Shulchan Aruch said, then repeat it. You cannot cause the guy to die faster. So if the wood chopper is keeping him alive, where do I come off stopping this wood chopper? Right? I'm not allowed to cause the man to die faster. If the guy keeps chopping wood, the patient will live longer. So shouldn't I go out and chop wood? I should go out and chop more wood. I shouldn't stop him from chopping wood. Right? Why should I chop? We talk, right? There's a mitzvah. So, what about the consistency here? Right?
You're not allowed to cause him to die faster. So isn't this causing him to die faster?
So yeah.
Right, so we'll talk about answers to the question in a second. So I want to ask this. Yeah. It answers the question. Okay, so one last question I want to ask, and then we'll talk about answers to it, is, wait a minute. There's two mitzvahs that we know about. You have to save people's life, and you're not allowed, right? There's v'hashei lo salo, and there's lo salam al dam reyecha. Do you remember those? What happened? Right? You. Why don't I have to keep this man alive? Why don't I have to try to keep him alive as long as possible? There's a positive mitzvah that I should do so, and if I don't, did I violate lo salam al dam reyecha? I should have to do it, and if I don't, I violate an iser. Okay, so we'll have to come up with reasons. You have to give an explanation. So what we're going to see is that the answer to the question two will answer question one. But we'll leave that for now, okay? So
question two and three is...
Well, two is really... The second question I answered really before. I mean, there's a problem with consistency here. Certain things are permitted, certain things are forbidden. Why? And then what happened to the two mitzvahs? The positive mitzvah and the lav. Okay, so let's answer question one first. Certain things are permissible, certain things are not. So let's come up with a list of reasons to differentiate between these two lists that I now erased. So, think about. But so you said before what?
It's
direct versus indirect.
Right.
We'll make a list and then we'll think about them. Well, let's think about it now. Direct. Which one's direct?
Feathers.
Closing the eyes.
Closing the eyes is direct.
Feathers.
The feathers is, so closing the eyes is certainly direct. Pushing him is direct. Right? That I know. Keys are direct.
The salt
sounds like direct, right? But salt is permissible.
Right.
Is salt direct or indirect? Is your distinction. Is removing the salt direct or indirect?
That's a good question.
The salt's permissible. So you can have to tell me the salt is indirect. And the feathers is direct. And the wood chopper is indirect. Right? So let me just make a list again just so you have them, right? We have, is moving.
That would be nice to say that, but how would the removing of the salt be indirect?
Yeah, it's harder. Keys versus salt
versus
and wood chopper.
Salt,
it's hard. You're going to have to make the argument that the feathers is indirect and the wood chopper. The feathers is direct and the wood chopper is indirect. You'd have to come up and the salt is indirect. I'm not saying it's not possible. You'd have to do that. It's challenging.
They both have like a. They both seem like there's. You're working through a medium, right? Like some sort of medicine almost. Like
right. You can come up with a reason.
It's not easy.
Well, they're referring to the soul, so you can say whatever you want. It's metaphysical. One's directly affecting the soul. One's indirectly affecting the soul. I have no idea how. It's not. It's possible. So if that's what the Rama means, so then we're gonna have to. So the question is, we're gonna try to relate this back. We're not right this minute. To modern therapy. We'll describe some patients. You know what? Let's do it now, because that'll be more fun. It'll be more fun to think about it in real life. Sorry that it's maybe that's not fun for you to think about dying patients. But let's do that. So we're going to talk about different types of dying patients. So in my mind, there are the chronically dying and the acutely dying. That's not true. So there are patients with chronic disease and there are patients with acute disease. Patients with chronic disease are cancer patients, right? So they know they're dying. Let's say it's pancreatic cancer, which we can't cure. Right? We really can't cure it. And this person knows he's dying, so he's dying slower. Or you have someone in the car accident, and they're also dying, but a lot faster.
That would be acute, no?
Yeah, so that's why I'm differentiating between two different people. So we're going to mostly talk about the cancer patients, okay? Because that's more common. So you have a patient who's slowly dying. So what is keeping him alive? So what happens is you need to support all of his vital functions as his body shuts down, right? His body is shutting down slowly. That's why I'm differentiating between a cancer patient and a sudden guy. So you need to make sure you're maintaining all of his bodily functions. So these are just an example of some things that you'll have to do. So you have to make sure his heart's beating, right? You have to make sure he's breathing. These are the main things, right? What else? Need his
water.
And kidneys, really. It's like the three main organs that we're going to have to support. Okay? Right? These are the three main, like everything else needs to work too. Your liver needs to work, your pancreas needs to work, you need insulin, right? If you're diabetic, you're going to need insulin, and you're going to need food. You mean nutrition.
So what's the nutrition here?
Nutrition and hydration.
Yes. I'm only hesitating because hydration is really a kidney thing. But, okay, fair enough. That's how you think about it, so it's important to work here.
Do you need lungs too?
Right, so breathing.
Oh, okay, breathing.
So how do you support, let's do, how do you support breathing when a person can, right, ventilator, right?
So, what is that? Anyone know? So, you have lungs, and you're a person. You have a neck. A little bit crude, but, and you have chest. And two lungs. Right? And how do you breathe? Why do you breathe? This is a person. This is a man. Oh, that's your mustache. Okay. So,
and you're Jewish.
You don't care. Fine. So, you don't care about my discussion, but you don't care. So, how do you breathe? Why breathe?
Diaphragm, contraction, muscles.
Yes, so diaphragm. This is the diaphragm.
This is important because we're going to talk about brain death, so we'll talk about that. Diaphragm, diaphragm. It's a muscle underneath. Right? Anyone ever do this, right? You take, do it with a balloon, right? You take a bottle of soda and you cut it in half. And you put a balloon on top and you put a balloon on the bottom and you can change the pressure inside, right? So this is a closed system, let's say, okay? So when the diaphragm goes down, right, the chest cavity now has more space, right, because it went down. Yeah?
Does the soap expand? What was that soap example?
You can use it with a. You can do it with, I should bring it in. I think my kids have one. With,
like an air filter or soap or something?
So what you do is take a soda bottle. No, a soda bottle.
Oh, soda.
And you do the following. This is a soda bottle that's cut in half, right?
Okay.
And you put a balloon here. Right? You put a balloon at the bottom, and then you put a balloon like this at the top. Right, this is open. Also a balloon. Okay, so this represents your diaphragm, this represents your lungs. You can try this at home if you want, or I can bring my kids one, maybe, if they didn't destroy it. So what happens is when you pull this balloon, so this is airtight, okay? This is airtight and this is airtight. Okay, just use scotch tape. So when you pull this balloon down, what will happen? Does anyone know?
The lung expands.
Right, the lung expands, right? This gets air sucked out of the lung. So why does this expand? Where does the air come from? It's this closed system. From outside, right? Air from outside rushes in. Why?
Pressure.
So pressure and volume, right? PV has to be a constant. Not exactly, right, relevant here, but what happens is you're creating, this is getting larger, this space here, and so air rushes in here. So same thing here. Your diaphragm goes down, air comes into your lungs. Okay? Something's not working. It's not working exactly. For whatever reason, your lungs are filled with water. Your diaphragm's not working. Your brain's not working. So what we can do is we get a ventilator. It's a tube. It's a big machine. Called a ventilator. And this machine will shove oxygen in and pull carbon dioxide out. So you can now, right? And then your lungs get oxygen.
This machine goes like all the way down the filter. It's just.
It goes up to the higher part where your lungs separate the two things. It goes all the way down the filter.
So when people wear this thing on their nose, it's not.
No, this is a ventilator. So there are different ways, different patients have different breathing needs. Okay, so when you get like at a colonoscopy, so when you have that, they put a little thing like the little you've seen this, my patients have like a little tube over here, goes over ears. You get a little bit of oxygen through your nose. You need a little bit more oxygen. It makes you a little bit more comfortable. Okay, so that's a patient who we just want them to be a little bit more comfortable for whatever reason. We want to make sure they're getting oxygenated air, like we're putting them out for a little bit. So that's fine. So there's some patients on a face mask. So what's the percentage of oxygen in the air? This is not all oxygen, this is air. 21%. Right? The rest is mostly nitrogen. Okay? The only thing that helps our cells work is oxygen. Nitrogen doesn't really help us. So there's 21% oxygen in the air. Okay? And each breath you take in, you're taking in a lot of air. But only 21% that has oxygen. But that's enough. Right? For all of us, we're healthy. That's enough. You could imagine that there could be certain disease states where you're still breathing the same amount, bless you, or you're breathing less. You're breathing at half the volume of air you were taking before. So you're now only getting, let's say you were getting before, I don't know, 10 liters of oxygen a minute, now you're only getting 5 liters of oxygen a minute. So what can I do to help you? I can increase the oxygen content in the air, right? If you, instead of 21%, you had 42%. So every breath you take, you're now going to double the amount of oxygen, right? So, yeah, because before you were getting 21% of each liter, and now you're getting 42% of each liter is oxygen. You only want the oxygen, the rest is helping it. So if I can just increase the amount of oxygen that you're getting, so that's good. So let's say you're breathing okay, you can breathe in and out, there's no problem. Or you have no problem taking air in and pushing air out. It just, you have water in your lungs, so you're not getting as much air. You probably also have a problem. Yeah, but let's say, so if I put a face mask on you, and I put 100% oxygen in that face mask, every breath you take doesn't get 100% oxygen, right? As before, it was only 21%, and it wasn't cutting it for you. Now every breath you're taking, even if you're taking each breath is less, it's 100% oxygen, right?
Too much oxygen problematic?
Yes. So it's not going to be 100, it'll be 70, but too much is going to be a problem. But we're not going to do too much. We're going to do the right amount, using an example, right? So you can use a face mask, and the face mask just puts oxygen in front of your face, right? Puts more oxygen in front of your face. So when you take a breath, you get more oxygen. What if you can't take a breath?
That's
weird. So there's actually a CPAP machine first, BiPAP, CPAP, which is like, some people use that for sleep apnea. People have sleep apnea who like stop breathing in the middle of the night. It's a face mask that goes on. So a face mask, a regular face mask, where it has a little tube goes behind, it's not airtight. It just provides you with oxygen in front of your face. When you take a breath, it's okay. So the person who has sleep apnea, who stops sleeping in the middle of the night, who stops breathing in the middle of the night, putting oxygen in front of his face isn't going to help him. Right? I need to shove that oxygen down his throat. So you create an airtight mask right around the face. It's strapped down much tighter. And it forces air in. Okay? So that's one type of thing. The ventilator actually goes into the throat. Right? All the way down the trachea. To force air in and take oxygen out. And take carbon dioxide out. Okay? It's similar. They're different. This I can control a lot better. BiPAP, CPAP, or this patient usually is unconscious. Usually. It's not comfortable. Once patients become conscious, we generally put it into the throat, right, directly. So they do a tracheotomy. You put it into here, right, and you can go straight into the trachea. It's a lot more comfortable because you can then move your mouth. Because before it's like in your mouth and it's taped. It's not very comfortable. There's
a cuff here, actually. There's something that goes around here to create it. To see, like I said, this was airtight, it's going to be airtight, maybe a closed system, but whatever.
So you can control this a lot better. BiPAP, CPAP are generally for awake patients. It looks insanely uncomfortable, right? Really uncomfortable, and it's harder to, it just doesn't look pleasant. But that's what you can do to provide someone with oxygen. So fine, we can provide with a ventilator in the most extreme cases or otherwise give them oxygen. So what else do we need to do for this patient, we said? Okay, this is, I guess, the more medical part of the year. Fine. So what else do we want to do for this patient? We have to provide his heart, his kidneys, his nutrition, and hydration. So what are we going to do for him?
Someone pick one and tell me what you do for
him. We need to supply him with nutrition, so just plug in a little...
He's not eating.
Can you eat in his
diet?
Feeding tube. Well, nutrition, you can do a feeding tube.
IV.
What's a feeding tube and where does it go?
IV, your arm.
Feeding tube and IV fluids. IVF is IV fluids. It also means intravenous fertilization, but more commonly IV fluids. So IV fluids, you put a needle in the arm and... Almost every patient's going to have IV fluid, so he's going to dehydrate. What about what's a feeding tube?
Goes into the stomach.
Goes into the stomach. How do you get it into the stomach?
Poke a hole in the stomach.
You can poke a hole in the stomach. That's called the G-tube. You need a gastrotomy for that, right? You have to poke a hole. You can do it without poking a hole, though. Poking a hole requires surgery.
You can go through the mouth.
You can go through the mouth or the nose. Right? So you can have an NG-tube.
Or do you need the advantage of going through the nose?
Nasogastric, as opposed to the mouth?
Yes.
Because you have a ventilator in your mouth. So we don't want to have two tubes in the same place. So we put it in the nose. Right? Nasogastric, nasogastric, gastric in the stomach. That's not very comfortable. This person's usually going to be not with it, right? Or you can make a hole in the stomach and go straight to the stomach. Like a G-tube.
The
G-gastric. Nasogastric.
Did you want to hole?
No, naso to gastric. Through the nose to the stomach.
So,
right? So it goes through the esophagus as opposed to the trachea, but you go through the nose because it's just easier.
And the stomach tube is just called gastric.
It's a G-tube, yeah. It goes, you poke a hole.
What's
N? N-I-V-F is IV fluids. You need both.
Do you do dialysis for kidneys?
Yeah, we'll talk about dialysis in a second because kidneys are special. I like kidneys. So it would be an NG-tube, okay? And so there's one more option for feeding. It's called TPN, total parenteral nutrition. You can get food through an IV. Right? So you should just know what this is. TPN. You can get through food through an IV. Now, the problem with TPN is it's great. TPN was invented mainly for cancer patients during chemo and radiation when they can't eat anything.
Is that what happened to me? Or is it
right?
Because,
what?
Is it because of the lack of appetite or because they literally can't?
Well, sometimes there is an obstruction. Okay. Or sometimes they just can't hold anything down. And so you get nutrition through an IV. And then putting a feeding tube in, they'll still vomit. Or there's an obstruction, I can't get a feeding tube in, I don't want to do surgery on them. So that's what TPN was invented for short periods of time. Using TPN long term will almost guarantee, according to most people, give you a fungal infection. A fungal infection in your blood. That's bad. You don't want a fungal infection anywhere, let alone your blood. So it's not a long term solution. This is not a solution for people, but they use it. Okay, kidneys, what are we going to do for kidneys? Dialysis, hemodialysis.
It's cool, what that is. What do the kidneys do?
They filter
your blood. Full disclosure, if I were to practice medicine, I would want to be a nephrologist. So I like kidneys, nephrologists. The kidneys, I think, are fascinating.
So hemodialysis, the kidneys filter your blood and make urine. Right? If your kidneys don't work, you don't make urine. And so we're going to hemodialysis is going to filter your blood. You're going to be connected to a machine for 3 to 4 several hours, 2, 3, 4 times a week in order to filter your blood. There is something called KVVH, where it's, I forgot what the acronym stands for, but it's 24-hour filtration going on. So that's okay, really bad. So it's hemodialysis. So the difference between all of these things, very important. Ventilator is working constantly. Feeding tube is working not so constantly, right? I have to fill it with food. IV fluids are working constantly. Hemodialysis is a couple times a week. Right?
What's the difference between hemodialysis and regular dialysis?
It's really called hemodialysis. So everyone just says dialysis, they mean blood, dialysis, filtration. So you'll see it called HD. Patient has HD, hemodialysis. So what do we do for the heart? So the heart, sort of, we can't replace.
Pacemaker.
So you can do a pacemaker, but we're not going to do surgery on this. So pacemaker is used for someone whose heart beats really slowly, and we need to pace it to go faster. Or there are two types of pacemakers. Okay, let's talk about pacemakers. So this is going to be important. So there are pacemakers.
For the marathon that they ran, they also said that pacemakers were like mandatory or something. But maybe that's a different issue. For the marathon, the New York Marathon, yeah. They're right to wear a pacemaker?
No. A pacemaker is the following. A pacemaker is a person's heart needs to beat 7 times a minute. Right? Go up and down depending on what you need. Some people's hearts starts to beat at 40. And it's random. And something's wrong with the electrical circuit in your heart. So we need to make sure that it beats constantly. So you're going to put a pacemaker in, and it's going to send the beat to the heart every so often, and it's going to keep this person alive. It's going to keep him beating at a constant pace. Right? Two different types of pacemakers. Some pacemakers work all the time, every minute, and some pacemakers work only when you go below 60, you go below 40. So long as your heart beats above 40 or 60, go on your own. You go below that, we'll start kicking in. Right? It can sense it.
There's something that's stopping you from...
Oh, it gets better.
Does it have to be inserted surgically? Or?
Yes, it's inserted surgically under the collarbone, and the leads have to go to the... to the ventricle. Not the Purkinje. To the Purkinje fibers of the ventricle, yeah. But you don't actually have to hit the Purkinje fibers because it's all electric current, so it'll all hit everywhere. But it doesn't matter. There's something else, right? You can have... Yeah. I'm blanking on the word. It's an internal defibrillator, meaning it's a pacemaker, but why do you have this pacemaker? We're afraid your heart's going to stop.
Yes.
So let's say someone's heart stops, and they stop.
That's the head node?
No, the SA node's inside. Right, let's say a person's heart stops, what do? You try to revive them with the heart to stop. But you don't want to do that, right? We could shock you, right? So what happens? We try to pump your heart or to shock you. So till we get the machine to shock you, until we call out Sella, it might take a long time. If we're concerned that this is going to happen to you, we can put something in your body that will shock you automatically. Right? It'll shock you automatically. So you can implant something like that. Right? So it doesn't do anything. Right now it's not working at all. You have internet, right? So you can have a defibrillator.
And it's usually triggered if the heart would entirely stop?
We're concerned for sudden stopping the heart, and it'll shock you. So what's it doing now? Now it's just monitoring.
No.
It's not doing anything.
So can you make a machine that has this internal defibrillator alongside a pacemaker?
A pacemaker, yeah. Most pacemakers have both. Most pacemakers can now shock you, but some patients don't need pacemakers, they only have the second one.
You can also have a ventricular assist device. A ventricular assist device is just something that your heart's pumping, just not enough, and so we'll have to give it a little bit of a jolt. We're not really going to talk about ventricular assist devices, but, okay? So you have all these things. So we now differentiate between direct and indirect things. Can we, how do we deal with these real life machines and stuff keeping people alive? Your distinction, go. Can't be wrong. So can I stop any of these things? Can I, all of these things?
They're all direct.
Why, right? You can.
There's a difference in the heart.
Mm-hmm.
I think if it's non-functional and then all of a sudden you dip or something like, you know, your heart rate stops and then it becomes activated.
So I might differentiate between that, between the internal defibrillator, right? The internal defibrillator right now isn't doing anything. It should your heart stop, it'll kick in. So I could see someone saying, well, that's indirect. I said, I'm going to stop it today. Your heart might go on for another 10 years, mm-hmm. right? It might. I can see that as being indirect. I can see that, right? It's not something that's direct. That's more indirect. I can see also someone saying hemodialysis is indirect.
Yeah,
because you got it today. Tomorrow, 3 days from now, you'll get it again.
It's sort of in any case, you're just pulling a plug on a machine. You're stopping the machine, and then the person stops breathing or something like that. So you might argue that there's an indirectness.
So in American law, this is a problem with American law. So American law, there's a concept of autonomy, right? First principle of bioethics. Autonomy, that trumps everything. You can do whatever you want to your own self. You can refuse or consent to any medical treatment. There are many limitations to that. People don't like to talk about it, but there are limitations. You're not allowed to commit suicide. Suicide is illegal. Right? You can't kill yourself. But it's illegal.
Yeah.
So what's the point of making that illegal? It's bad. It's illegal. So you're allowed to refuse therapy, though. In American law, so I don't know. Well, let's think about it. In American law, let's say you're on a ventilator and you're conscious, right? Told you you're not comfortable. You're on tracheostomy. You can't breathe. The ventilator's breathing for you. Can you tell the doctor, shut it off, I don't want it anymore?
Yes.
Yes. Why?
Autonomy.
You have to defend it. You say
the patient autonomy.
They want to say
that's treatment. It's not.
If he's a competent individual.
He's competent. We had a psychiatrist. He's competent.
Well, I don't see why not.
So he can come and say, shut up the ventilator. And this person will die. Right? The person will die. Yeah? Mm-hmm. And why is that permissible? Autonomy. So why is it suicide?
Because it's you're just taking away that which has been sustaining, but you're not actively killing it.
Okay. So the way the bioethicists want to say what you're saying is that it's not that the ventilator killed, not removing the ventilator that killed him, but it was his disease that killed him.
Right.
Right? Well, something's wrong with him, that's why he needs a ventilator. Not removing the ventilator that killed him, it's the disease that killed him. Right? And he's just stopping the therapy from treating the disease.
Yeah, jumping into water.
So hold on.
It's not you that killed, it's the water that killed him.
So we'll get into the logical inconsistencies with this. So that's what the claim is, right? It's not removing the ventilator that kills you, it's the disease that kills you. So they want to say there's no difference between saying, well, say, look, let's say you come to the patient and he's having trouble breathing. He says, look, we can keep you alive by putting a ventilator down your throat, by putting an endotracheal tube down your throat and connecting you to a ventilator. Everyone would agree that in American law, the patient can say, no, thank you, right? I'm refusing treatment. Might not be smart, but you can refuse treatment, right? So American law says, well, if you can refuse treatment, you can also withdraw treatment. Once it's given, you can say, well, I don't want it anymore. No difference. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you can withhold treatment, withhold means don't start it, you can also withdraw treatment. This is American law again. So the problem is, okay, so when you say, stop the ventilator, that's my autonomous decision, and the patient dies, we say that it's not the removal of the ventilator that killed him, it's the disease state that killed him. And let's say the patient says, no, I want the ventilator. And comes along a really terrible, horrible person and shuts the machine off.
That's murder.
That's murder. Manslaughter, maybe. It's murder.
Manslaughter. Yeah.
So he killed him.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Didn't the disease kill him?
Well,
if when the guy himself does it, we say, no, it's not the removal of the ventilator. What killed him then? The same thing killed him in both cases, right?
But his autonomy was
his autonomy was violated.
Right.
So is it a criminal law or a civil penalty? Did I violate his civil rights or did I kill him? There's a difference. Well, once a civil penalty, I'm only going to pay money. When I'm going to sit in jail for many years?
Because ultimately the respirator is sustaining it by removing the ventilator, regardless of whether or not it is the direct cause of the death, it's still a facilitation of the death.
So right.
It's almost like working as an accomplice, so to speak. And therefore, it's murder. I mean,
but when the patient himself does it, it's not suicide. Generally, we assume...
Because he has the right to choose.
So generally, we assume that if I did it to you, and it's murder, if you did it to you, it's suicide.
Correct.
The same action. We did the same action.
What if certain signatures are in place, and there's a videotape, guiding the doctor's hand to the...
No, so what? If I say I'm refusing therapy, I can shut off the machine, you can shut off the machine. That's the law. It's autonomy. It's respecting my autonomy. I can shut off the machine, and that's legal. That's not suicide.
You as in the patient.
I'm the patient. I can say, I'm competent. I'm very competent. Psychiatry came. They said he's competent. Unlikely. But let's say someone else maybe. They said he's a normal person. He's competent. And he can shut off the machine. That's okay. But when I do it, you want to say it's murder. Anyone think it's not murder?
You do it with his permission?
Well, I think it's...
Let's say against his permission. That's what
I'm saying. I think it's just legal suicide. It's the same thing, just they're making it legal.
Right, okay.
Because the rule of autonomy is above all.
But I can't kill my... No, but if I put a gun to my head, that's illegal.
Right. But the difference is that this has to do with treatment. It's still suicide. It really is just the exact same thing, but we say it's legal.
Okay. Fair enough. No one wants to say that. You realize. No one wants to say it's suicide, but it's permissible.
It's uncomfortable.
Because it's uncomfortable. But fair enough. Let's see if anyone has. I don't have that way to get it. Yeah.
If the hospital had to shut down power for whatever reason, then all of these ventilators would shut off, I imagine. So would that, it wouldn't seem like murder in that case because you're.
So it's inadvertent.
It's even more.
It's manslaughter. Maybe the hospital would be guilty of manslaughter for not having a power or backup generator.
If there was a big flood and the electricity is like electrocuting people, so they have to shut off the generator like at once. So it'll kill a lot of people, but like it seems even more indirect.
Okay, so that's... so.
It wouldn't be murder, mass murder. Really.
And it's... Would it be, so you're saying... No, let's say I came over and shut off the machine. He's saying, I want the machine on. He's yelling and screaming, I want the machine on. I shut it off.
That's murder. But, like, to shut off just electricity for the entire hospital...
No, I'm shutting off his machine. He's yelling and screaming, leave it on. And I push the button and it's off. It's murder, but if he does it, it's not suicide.
But because of this...
Yeah. There's no right or wrong here. This is like more of like an opinion, like philosophy debate.
What would be the basis?
Hold on.
I don't know.
I don't either.
Yeah.
What would be the basis to say that it's
This is the law. The law is it's not suicide, and I'm pretty sure that the law says it's manslaughter. I don't think it's murder. I think it's manslaughter. I don't know the difference. Might be murder. It's definitely wrong, legally. If I do it, but if you do it, it's not suicide. So I always assumed... And maybe it makes moral sense that if I do something to you that's considered murder, I'm killing you, right? If I shoot you, that's murder. If you shoot you, that's suicide. It's the same action. So we always...
Something only indicates that if somebody does something to themselves, it's different than if someone else does it to them. If you steal from yourself, it's nothing. If someone steals from you, it's something.
But suicide's illegal.
I understand. But autonomy is a massive...
Principle. So I'm choosing. I'm a competent person. I passed my psychiatry evaluation. I want to end my life, so I want to shoot myself.
But there's a difference also between the violent action. I think there's
it's not violent. I'll inject myself with KCL. It won't be violent. I'll overdose on Tylenol. It'll be fine.
Shooting yourself is very different from shooting yourself and overdosing on Tylenol is very different from removing the respirator.
So you're going to have to explain to me why.
Because in each case, again, it's in overdosing on Tylenol and shooting yourself. Is the
active and this is removing something that's keeping myself alive. Now, but when I do it to you, it is the same.
Yeah,
meaning you can't differentiate it based on the action because the action is the same action.
No, I agree with Mike that it's not the same action. Again, this is removing.
If I do it or you do it?
No, this is removing an impediment.
Right so if I shut it off or you shut it off, that's the same action.
No, but there's we're just talking in the suicide realm. What's the difference between Tylenol over?
Okay, I can see that.
Is the removing the impediment of at a constant state of dying? And
but we're all dying. Taking,
no, that's no, not, but you know what I mean. And then, and then taking a tremendous amount of action to enhance.
Okay, but now, why would I do it? Is it
because when you do it and you're going against the patient's wish,
it's as if it is a direct killing. But when the patient decides to do it, it's an indirect killing. And it's
still
okay. I don't think it has to be viewed, I don't think the same action has to be viewed in the same
way. So you have to say that, right? Which is effectively what he's saying.
To reconcile.
If you want to say, you're saying based on the action itself, it's suicide. If I had to judge it by the action, it's suicide. Because I can't get him for murder if it's not...
I disagree.
Why did the patient die?
Because
the ventilator was... Why did he die now? What was the proximate cause of this man's death?
He wanted to die.
Let's say someone jumps out, there's a plane crash, and people are coming around in the... People are in the raft, in life vests. And I'm a terrible person, I come and swoop down and remove the life vest from somebody.
Okay.
I didn't kill the guy. The water killed him.
No, but he wasn't in a consciousness, he wasn't dying.
He was dying, he's in the water. He wasn't dying either, he's on the ventilator.
No, he is dying.
Why?
The impediment.
No, he's not dying either. The ventilator is keeping him alive. The life vest is keeping him alive. Without the life vest, he's dead.
I disagree. He's not in a constant state of dying.
What does that mean, a constant state of dying? All the constant state of dying.
No, but this is a very... This is
I'm pushing your buttons. It's okay.
Constant state of death.
No, he's fine. With the ventilator, he can go on.
The door closing, then he would be dead. The life vest, he's not dying.
He's dying. He's in the middle of the Atlantic.
I think that...
With a life vest, so he's not...
With the ventilator.
The concept of autonomous modifies the whole situation.
You have to say that, right? You're stuck.
No. I think that if you take away the person's life vest, going against, and you're literally stealing what their means of support, of life support, then that action is manslaughter or whatever it is. What kills him. Because you took away that which he needed to survive.
He needs this ventilator. He's good to die.
But when I say survive, I don't just mean literally live, but I mean his means of living a life that of fulfillment. But if he feels that his life of fulfillment will be more fulfilled by removing the ventilator versus turning it off himself, then that's his means of fulfillment. That's
so you're saying quality of life.
Quality of life, yes.
You're saying quality of life defines it. So let's say a patient says, my life's terrible. I lost my job, my wife cheated on me, my kids killed each other, and...
Or I want to
have
a case. Somebody else.
I just have to get permission. I'm pretty sure I can share with you this case. It's from I did my medical ethics rotation, so I didn't see this patient. But like, there was this woman with multiple sclerosis who was dying, who tried to commit. She believed in rational suicide. She believed that suicide wasn't illegal. It shouldn't be illegal. So she tried to kill herself several times in the past, and now I can tell the story, I guess. And then they've stopped her, and she had a DNR order in. And then her son killed her husband. Or his father, I think it was her husband.
Just as a side thing?
Just, it happened, right? So she's dying from multiple sclerosis, and then the son kills the father, and she has this whole view of rational suicide. She tries to commit suicide, but before she commits suicide, she writes a DNR.
What's DNR?
Do not resuscitate me. We'll talk about that. So, this woman, was that rational? Is that, she thought her quality of life was terrible.
She has psych values.
Let's say she was fine. So you'd say her quality of life is determining, so she can kill herself.
What suicidal patient would be deemed fine? What's
you're assuming that that's not possible. That's a value judgment.
That's not possible.
And why is removing the ventilator not suicide? He's conscious. If you don't say the word quality of life, you're stuck. This patient is alive. According to every definition, he's living, he's talking to you.
One case is against his will, and the other case is not against his will.
Okay, but that doesn't change what I did. What I
it
did.
It does change what you did. Changing the situation like changes what you
You're saying. Doing. You're saying what he's saying. You're just saying that it's not actually suicide. The action is suicidal, but because of the intention, I'm going to redefine it. Which is effectively saying it's suicide, but it's okay here because.
Intention.
Which is okay. Doesn't bother me.
I think intention doesn't inform action. That you have to.
It's a suicidal action.
Like anything else. You have to
okay.
Based on situation.
But from the point. Okay, so you have to. I think you're not saying two different things. You're trying to be less, more comfortable about not saying it's suicidal, but it's okay. Meaning murder is sometimes okay. We don't like to talk about it.
Yeah, like
murder is okay. You can kill, we can kill in war, right? You can kill, murder is fine, sometimes. In war, it's fine. If you believe in the death penalty, or in the halachic system, the Sanhedrin, it's fine. We believe aborting a fetus for saving the life of the mother might be murder, but it's fine. Sometimes it's okay. So maybe here it's okay. It's murder, but it's okay.
I have no trouble saying it.
Right.
So,
so in this classroom, we don't. But outside of this classroom, sometimes people do.
Right.
Yeah.
I was just saying, I was trying to say, with the Navy arguing that
the person in the life vest versus the person on this ventilator, if you took them outside of the context and just had them like stand up in a room without anything around them, then the person on the ventilator would just die. But the person in the life vest...
Wait, the kid thinking about it, the room is in the ocean.
Right, meaning the ocean is like an external circumstance. So if you just have the...
Because one's inside of him and one's outside of him?
Sure.
Okay.
It's a distinction.
Okay, it is a distinction. So we'll talk about these cases. We'll bring a bunch of cases. We'll talk about what's going on. But I find it very hard to say, personally, that removing the ventilator didn't kill him. The disease killed him. Removing the ventilator brought about his death. Now, whether that's permissible or not is a separate question. It doesn't bother me necessarily to say that it might be permissible. I can understand that argument. I can hear that argument, that in certain circumstances, it's okay. But to say that that's not what caused his death... That's why he died now. If you didn't remove the ventilator, he'd live another year. Yeah. He died today because you shut it off. You're the proximate cause of his death. Now, some circumstances is okay, some cases not okay. But I find it personally hard to say otherwise.
Would you say that there's a... Would you say it might be permissible. There's a dual cause to death?
Could be.
Like, not necessarily one overarching
cause
to death.
Yes, possible.
There's a dual cause of death.
Fine, but without me, he wouldn't die. You agree? He would not be dead today if I didn't intervene.
Doctor, I don't know how long...
No, let's say the doctors came and everyone said he'd live a year. 2 years, three, whatever. Right. A month, a day, an hour.
Yeah.
5 minutes, and I stopped it now.
That's why I'm saying dual, because without the disease, he wouldn't be dead, and without you, he wouldn't be dead.
But we're all going to die. Meaning... Okay.
But that doesn't help anything. We're all dying. So none of this is important.
Okay, so we can talk about it, but just these things to think about. They're like... I find it hard to say that... The disease killed him, and I was not. I'm totally out of control. So you're saying I'm involved, but it's okay. Fine.
Yeah.
I'm saying I'm involved also.
You're on the button. Hmm? Yeah, you're involved.
Fine. Okay. That's all I want to. That's all my only point.
Okay.
I was involved, and it might be mutter, it might be usser, it might be legal or illegal. In American law, it's legal. Just so you know, it's legal to do it yourself, but it's illegal if I do it against your wishes. Now, the courts have this fight in like these opinions. It's hard to see, but they have this. They're having the same discussions that we're having. And it's hard to know. Yeah.
There's also a case early in American law where there's two people on a boat, and one just kills the other because of need or something that's considered acceptable because there was some kind of...
So can you kill one person to save yourself? Yeah, that's a question.
Right. And then,
but that's to save yourself.
Okay. But then also, like, we have the quality of life, and we have indirect.
So we're going to talk about quality of life. The Ramah is definitely not talking about quality of life, right? So you can't explain to me the Ramah based on quality of life. And we'll see what role quality of life plays in halacha.
We could also add maybe there's passive and active.
Passive and active, okay. Hold on, let's see what I'll say and then we'll talk about it in a second. Passive versus active. Yes?
What if like, the patient's in a coma, so they don't really have, and the doctor says they won't wake up out of the coma, we keep them alive?
So now you're asking a different question. It's really the same question, it's just... Now I don't know, how do I define what the patient wants? You want to know what does the patient's will have to do with it?
The patient won't make up the
moment. So we'll talk about it, but just briefly, because we don't get to it. You can decide ahead of time what you want. You can also elect a proxy. You can elect a proxy to say, when I cannot speak, he speaks for me. You can do that. And if you did that, then we go by the proxy, and that's it. You can also write down your wishes in an advance directive. The proxy can go against that. Meaning, because you can say, well, he wrote this down 10 years ago, he changed his mind. But you can write down your wishes, which are usually respected, or you can have a proxy. If you didn't do those things, usually younger people don't do either of those things. Also, disclosure, I have a proxy, my wife's my proxy, I'm not embarrassed about that, I'm aware bad things happen, then we should have proxies, it's not a bad thing to have a proxy. Then we can go to the surrogate decision maker. A surrogate decision maker is your next of kin defined by law. Different states define that differently. Just what order you go in. And they make a decision for you. If no one is found, then the court can make a decision for you. How does the court decide what's best for you? Well, that's a different discussion. Yeah. Okay? So what about active versus passive? Can you explain that in the Ramah?
What the bird, what was it called? The woodchopper.
The moving is active.
Right.
The keys are active. The woodchopper's passive. The salt is a shtickle active.
Why? Because you're removing
it. I took it off.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay, so let's say removing the salt is an active. Removing, I'm removing. And removing the feathers is also...
active.
It's active. If removing the salt is inactive, is passive.
So the feathers aren't explained because there's some sort of...
You're really saying indirect, right? Passive means I don't do anything.
Right, right. So
passive means when the wood chopper stops, I don't go and get him to keep chopping wood. Right?
So taking away would be passive.
I don't know, you have to have a more broad definition of passive. Define it how you want. I don't care.
I think the salt and the wood chopper are both passive. And
you're having a more... When I say... So, passive versus active can mean kumva ase merse bal tasa.
Right.
Right, in halacha we have kumva ase means get up and do, shave bal tasa means sit down and do not do. Right? It comes up in halacha context. So, you can't tell me the salt is shave bal tasa, meaning I can sit and not do anything. That's not passive in the classic sense. Means I'm not moving, I'm not intervening.
Yeah,
so you can't say that. So you have to use a broader definition of passive, which is more close to indirect than passive.
All of them seem kumbase, right?
Yeah, all of them seem kumbase. So you have to use passive more broadly, encompassing some element of indirect, right? I understand you're saying I'm removing as opposed to adding. Yeah. I see that. Okay. So in this case, in what about real life, Mikey? Real life.
Yeah.
What would you do?
In which case?
Pick one.
Oh, what would, for confrontation?
You said active versus passive. No, what would be permissible according to this Rama?
Nutrition and hydration for sure.
For sure what?
To remove.
You can remove.
If he says to do it.
To remove. It's in my throat now. Okay.
I mean, that's the same thing as removing.
Ooh, you do. I don't know.
That's
hold
like
on.
Removing the salt. My.
So you said to remove and you said to not replenish.
Passive means not doing anything.
Passive means not replenish, meaning once the food bag empties, I don't have to replace it.
Oh, yeah.
You're comfortable with that. You want to turn it off also. You want to take it out.
Saying, I mean, once you're not replenishing it, what's the
point? One shave al tase, one kum vase.
But again, like you said, we have to look at it in a more...
You can look at it however you want. This is your definition.
So I'm looking at it in a more broader perspective, and therefore, I don't see it as strictly shave al tase or kum vase.
Yeah,
you
can find it however you want. Yeah.
I see nutrition and hydration, whether or not you don't replenish the bag or you actually take it out.
Okay.
Either way, I see it as a passive action. Because you're not...
And hemodialysis is certainly passive, right? Because just don't go to the next one.
I think they're all theoretically passive.
Ventilator is passive, I'm shutting it off.
Well, it's not shocking you. The different way.
No, ventilator. It's providing oxygen.
The ventilator...
It's in your throat.
The ventilator is passive. I mean, it's active.
That's active.
Yeah.
Okay. So, some people do want to say that there's a difference between kumbase and shave al tase. It's very hard to read into the Rama, in my opinion. Right? Because it's hard to say stopping the wood chopper is passive, but they want to say it's a difference between kumbase and shave al tase. Very hard to read that into the Rama.
Is there a difference with because things were made in these in the ones that are constantly running and the ones that aren't?
Yeah. I'm going to raise the question. So that's very relaxed. That's actually very interesting. Because, okay, we'll talk about that. So 4 is continuous versus discontinuous. You're going to have a problem saying that in the Ramada, right?
Yeah. Because
no, well, let's see.
Well, the
moving the patient is discontinuous. I can't do that. So the feathers are continuous and I can remove it.
Right.
And the wood chopper is continuous but I can remove it.
Yeah.
And the salt continues so I can remove it. But some people want to say this. So let's say you think, so let's say patient crashes. We said we're talking about chronic cancer patients. Let's say we have the car accident guy. The brain gets hit, but his head gets smashed by a truck. They bring him to the hospital. And we don't know if he's going to make it or not. So what do you do? He can't breathe. What do you do? He just came in. You're not asking questions. You're in the emergency room.
Yeah.
You tried to save him, right? You put him on the ventilator, right? Okay. So then he's on the ventilator and he doesn't get better and he's stable. And so you can't shut this ventilator off now, according to most poskim.
Is there ever
halacha lemaisa? Most poskim will say you cannot shut a ventilator off.
Is there ever an issue of like kavod amesi, even though he's like in a coma? Like
he's
no,
alive.
Like, is there kavod in general? Like,
it's kavod, but keeping him alive trumps everything. Pikuach right. Nefesh will trump everything. So, you can't shut this ventilator off. And so, some people want to say, well...
With the case of the Gemara already, breaking the pot, that's shutting off the ventilator.
No, he was. So the question is, how do you understand that?
The
maybe. Maybe, right? Did Amta the Rebbe shut off the bed? Okay, so many Pokemon say that. They say davening is different than actual therapy.
But she wasn't davening. She broke.
She stopped. She stopped the davening. So right. You have to say davening is parallel to a ventilator.
Yeah. It's because it's a continuous thing that was
maybe,
keeping alive.
Maybe.
It was
but
life support, right? But
it's so metaphysical life support.
Life support? I mean,
no, metaphysical life support is very different than oxygen.
Try it to,
you can start trying.
The idea of life support.
So most folks are going to say, though, even if you can't stop a ventilator, you can still pray for death. And because davening is a different.
Can you break the pot?
One of the rabbis said that tefillah is not all like medicine.
Right. Most Pokemon say tefillah is not medicine. So it's clever. But and you it's similar, yeah. But not going to be parallel. So what they wanted to do in Israel was, so they said, you know, a lot of patients aren't shutting off the ventilators, and the bioethical movement in the last 50 years, and doctors in general, want to shut off ventilators. So if you have a patient who's not getting better, so do you want to keep him going, or do you want to just say, forget about it? So most Pesukim will tell you the proper halakhic attitude is that life is life, and we protect it at all costs. Much of the secular attitude is, well, this person has no quality of life, he's better off dead. So you want to shut it off. So what do you do? So now you have a dilemma. You show up in the emergency room and the doctor is like, well, I don't know if he's ever going to shut the ventilator off. Maybe I should have put him on the ventilator to begin with. That's very bad. Right? Because there are some patients who everyone agrees will get better. So that's very bad. Right? Because you want them to put the patient on the ventilator. You want to put every patient on the ventilator. Even if you think like the secular philosophy that once he's not getting any, he's not going to be returned to his fully functional self, it's not worth it. Well, some people might. I don't really know. So I want everyone on a ventilator. But I want to be able to shut them off, which I can't do. So what do you do? So what do you have? What's your solution? What's your solution to this?
How does the quality of life...
hold on. We'll talk about halacha. Okay. What are you going to do to solve this problem?
If the patient's competent, is that part of... Is he also...
He's not competent. What do you do to solve this problem? This is actual lemaisa. They do this. They try to do this in Israel. How do you solve this problem? So they say continuous versus discontinuous.
What do you mean?
So how are you going to stop a ventilator? Ventilator is continuous. You said that was active, right? So what if I had a 7-day Shabbos clock on my ventilator? It'll go off in 7 days. I'll put it on now. It'll go off in 7 days. And then, if I want, I'll restart it.
Temporary Shabbos, temporary ventilator?
No, they have a Shabbos clock. They plug it to the ventilator.
It's
yeah.
Actually temporary.
And then, if I want to restart it, I'll restart it. And if I don't want to, Shei Bel Tasa. It's discontinuous. I'm just not restarting something. So is that legitimate? Is that real? Can you do that? What do you think?
Yeah.
Hmm?
It's the same thing as shutting it off.
I'm with you. So is Rabbi Yashin.
When you put it on with it or with the Shabbos clock attached to it.
I think you did something wrong. Really? When you put it in with the Shabbos clock attached, you didn't treat this guy.
You didn't.
You faked it.
No.
You treated him. You didn't give him a ventilator. You gave him a temporary ventilator. And you have no right to do that, I think.
It could always be prolonged. Yeah.
It can be, but I should do the maximum effort right now.
You saved him. That was you did 100.
I saved him for 7 days.
No, you saved him this minute when he was dying.
You're right.
You turned it into another.
But I have a longer vision.
100%.
You're right. But I look ahead. I don't just look at this minute. I have to make sure what I'm doing in general is fine.
Why couldn't you theoretically take a ventilator, put it on a timer for an extended amount of time, say 30 days?
They do that, yeah, 7 days, then, 30 days. I just said 7. I don't know what they really do.
And then continuously assess the patient's progress.
That's what they're doing.
If you're getting to a point where there's going to be absolutely no recovery, then you just don't reset the timer.
That's what they're doing. That's what the suggestion is.
So what's...
I'm saying when you put him on that ventilator with the timer,
why?
You didn't do whatever you could.
Why?
Because you could have put him on the real ventilator. Without games.
No.
You put him on the ventilator, that's going to stop in 30 days. And then he'll have to make a decision later.
That's retroactively.
So, halach l'maisa, so they asked the Tzitz Eliezer.
I understand how that's not what everything you could.
You see why it's different, right?
If the patient shows up in cardiac arrest at a hospital, right?
You just stop it.
You need to...
So, hold on. First of all, if a person shows up, do I have to put him on the ventilator?
Yes.
Do I have a chiv to ventilate every single patient?
Yeah, seems so.
Every single patient I have a chiv to ventilate?
Yeah.
If I have a chiv to ventilate every single patient...
No, not every patient.
Hold on, whoa, that's why I question
I asked. Only the patient
that need it. What does that mean? Okay, so do I have a chiv to ventilate every patient without breathing?
Who
Whoa, you're now, you see the hole you're digging for yourself, right? Because when the timer goes off, do I have to ventilate that patient?
What do you mean?
The timer goes off in 7 days, and he's not getting any better. He still can't breathe. Do I have to keep to ventilate him?
So if there are other means of improving the patient's overall condition...
No, he can't breathe. The guy's not breathing. He can't breathe. Yeah. Do I have the chiv to ventilate this patient?
If
you're going to say yes, then the timer's silly.
No one's going to die.
Right?
Why?
Because if I have to ventilate him at every moment, so the fact that it went off means I have chiv to turn it back on.
Correct.
So then what's the point of the timer? I don't know. You have to say that there's some people I can do shave al-haisa and not ventilate, right? You have to say that. Otherwise, the timer's silly.
In that case, it's active versus passive, though. Restarting.
You're right. Do I have a chiv to actively ventilate every patient who's not breathing? If you answer that question yes, then when anyone stops breathing, I don't care why he stops breathing, whether a ventilator shut off, whether a timer shut it off, whether there was an electric power outage, I now have to do mouth to mouth. I have to ventilate this patient. It went off. Ventilate him. If you answer that question yes, that you always have to ventilate everybody.
But
this timer doesn't help you, yeah?
It does, because at a certain point, if the patient...
You're going to...
Let me ask you a question. Does the patient's condition improve enough that he's competent at any point?
No competence. Okay. No, I don't have any information. He doesn't...
So if
he's
the
a child.
If the patient's condition is never going to improve...
Never going to improve.
Then, yeah, you're allowed to turn it off.
So now you said... I asked him, no, so you're cheating. We're going to stop, but hold on. You're cheating. I asked you question one was, do you have to ventilate every single patient always? And you said yes.
Because...
No, now you want to say no.
No, I'm not saying no. I'm saying...
There's certain patients that don't have to.
No. For every patient you need to, if they can't breathe on their own.
They can't breathe on their own.
The reason why is because you need to stabilize them in order to assess the overall underlying...
And if they can't, and if I can't fix it...
Then you can.
So there are certain patients that don't have to ventilate.
But you never know that until the very beginning.
Fine. Okay.
At first, yes.
Okay, no. But you're admitting that in the world there are patients who I will not have to ventilate.
But you never know that.
Fine, but once I know it, I don't have to ventilate.
Right.
So you're answering my first question is no. There are certain patients.
Yes, if a patient shows up.
No. You're answering. You're right. Okay. So let's say you're saying I'm asking a theoretical point and you're saying a practical point. That's what we're disagreeing about. Okay. You're saying practically, I don't know who this is, but there is going to be a patient in the world who does not require ventilation at some point in his life.
Right?
It becomes in dead. No, someone
he's not
dead.
They start restarting people?
He's not dead.
Why not?
We'll talk about the irreversibility of it.
Right.
No one's
dead.
So
he's dead.
We're going to stop at this point and then we'll talk about it. Anyone who can come back to life was not dead.
That's
assuming.
You're
right. So we'll talk about it.
He never died.
Right.
But
so
if he's dead, he's lying.
We'll talk about that. Anyone's actually interested. Anyone here for Shabbos? No, I'm giving actually a shiur on this topic. But anyone here for Shabbos? No? Okay. So, I'm going to give that shiur here also. So, if you were going to come to that, so then we're talking about irreversibility of death. Leaving that aside, because it's more complicated. So, we'll talk more about this. You're saying there are patients I don't have to ventilate. How far do you have to go? What happened to Vashi Mosul and Losam?
It's still Vashi Mosul. Oh!
So, be Meshiv!
No, I meant...
We'll talk about it. We'll get... okay. Fine. So, let's...